stories carry with them great power.
They can transport us into the light and into the dark.
And into a place in between, a land of shadows.
It is in this land where the macabre and the strange reign.
With tales of terror,
tales of hope,
tales of the whimsical,
and the weird.
These are stories told in the shadows.
And we are the shadow storytellers.
There are few things as great and beautiful as new love. Yet the holiday season will most certainly put any budding relationship to the test. There are many things that one can discover about their partner during the holiday season. What their cooking is like, the temperament of their family, and maybe even if their place might be haunted. Today, a new couple will spend their holiday dealing with ghosts from the past in a tale we call Cozy and Snug.
When Judy had said she lived in a cottage, Nate had been picturing a rented pool house behind one of the mansions in the hills. When she had mentioned her plans to knock out the living room wall to make room for a Christmas tree, he had thought she was being wistful. But when she invited him over and asked him to bring as many tools as he owned, he complied, prepared for the day to go any number of ways. The address she gave was not in the hills, but at the industrial end of the valley, and hidden behind a row of boxy, beige office blocks, there was a building, the only dwelling for miles around, for which cottage was the only appropriate word. Its roof was as steep and curved as a gingerbread house, sloping low enough over the red brick walls that Nate could have reached out and touched the shingles. The yard grew wild with tall grass and would probably be overrun with dandelions in the spring. Standing beside the cottage was a fir tree, so tall that only the very apex of the A-frame roof stretched higher than its upper branches, and so full that Nate almost missed the stand at its base and took it for a permanent fixture of the garden. Technically, Nate had all the home improvement tools he owned in his back pocket, in the form of three differently sized screwdrivers. He used the small one now and then for replacing batteries, and had once used the middle-sized one to fix a doorknob his roommate had broken. He wasn't sure he'd ever used the big flathead one. He opened the back of his hand-me-down station wagon, surveyed the jumbled and extensive collection of hardware borrowed from his mom's garage on the way over, and selected a 10-pound sledgehammer. The rest he left to continue weighing down the rear suspension until he could ask a few follow-up questions about what, if any of it, would be needed. Jokingly, he lifted the sledgehammer over his shoulder and struck a calendar model pose before knocking on the door. Judy opened it almost instantly, put both hands to her mouth to stifle a laugh, and then took hold of the hammer's handle to pull him in for a kiss. When she pulled away and waved him inside, she took the hammer with her. "Thanks for coming," she said. "Of course," said Nate, following her down a few padded steps and glancing around the cottage's interior. The steep roof was hollow, and another brick wall down the middle formed a triangular living room on the left. The floor was at least a foot lower than the ground outside, with yellow-green carpet thick enough to give the impression that the unmown lawn had followed them inside. "Where'd you ever find this place?" "Right here," said Judy. "Well, obviously," Nate thought. "But, I mean, you own this?" Judy shook her brown, tinsel-straight hair over one shoulder and swung the sledgehammer into the brickwork, sending a shower of red clay chips into a tarp laid out below. "Uh-huh," she answered, and swung again. She examined the small dent of damage with dissatisfaction. "Give me a hand?" Nate wasn't sure why a sledgehammer hitting a wall he'd never seen before today made him so anxious. A general sense of irreversibility, maybe, or just of absent qualifications. He took the hammer back but didn't lift it. "There's no chance I'm going to electrocute myself, is there?" he asked. "No." "Or hit a pipe? Or knock the roof down on top of us?" "This stretch was added after the place was built. It's just bricks." Nate gave himself a moment to envision that and to get a feel for the hammer before giving it a careful swing. A few more chips of red tumbled into the tarp. "Go on, give it a good whack." "Are you sure? I feel like I'm defacing a work of art here." Judy laughed. "You were that kid who thought Legos were single use, weren't you?" Nate thought about denying this. "What of it?" "Come here." Judy beckoned him back up the steps, past the front door and around the wall into the cottage's other triangular half. A little kitchen of wood paneling and painted tiles took up about a third of the living room's length, presumably leaving space for another room or two beyond. "You don't see it, do you?" asked Judy. Nate examined the wall from this side. "Okay, pigs are actually cooking in here," she said. Nate took a step toward the stove and found himself squeezing awkwardly between Judy and the counter. "I guess it would be pretty short on elbow room, huh?"
"Elbow room," Judy agreed. "Ventilation, company."
"Now imagine that instead of behind a brick wall, your cooking wall gathered around the Christmas tree with your guests. Or guest. Filling up the whole cottage with warmth and deliciousness instead of making one corner of it into a blast furnace." The image of gathering around that tree with Judy did make it easier to give that wall a heartier hit. They had only been dating for a little more than a month, but she was already the first person Nate had managed to keep in his life that long without some outside force. A class, a job, a lease, or DNA in common, holding them together. Instead of nodding to each other in the halls for weeks and slowly developing private jokes at a professor's expense, as he was used to meeting people, they'd just been marching in the same protest and she'd offered to hold his sign while he tied his shoe. "I am not a pre-existing condition," it had said. He'd been holding it for his mother while she stopped to buy water, but at the sight of Judy, she'd hurried on ahead, not to be seen until the march broke up in front of the hospital an hour later. It had been a conversation starter, at any rate, and by the time they'd reached the hospital, Nate had asked Judy to join him for coffee as if he asked that sort of question every day. There was an effort to seeing Judy that there hadn't been with his few college girlfriends, the necessity of securing a next time with every time he saw her, but he hadn't let his attention lapse so far. He was hoping very much that retreating to a homier locale than a coffee house with her would soon become routine. He pulled the sledgehammer back out of the hole it had made, and when he almost tapped the sink behind him in the process, the two of them returned to the living room side to liberate the kitchen from there. Judy put on her Christmas playlist. Nate retrieved two pairs of safety glasses from his car, along with a chisel and a smaller hammer to encourage the brick to fracture in a neater, more deliberate way. In the course of a few hours, they'd completely filled Judy's two curbside garbage cans with broken brick and started a significant pile in the backyard. "How much of this wall did you say was added?" Nate asked when his chisel knocked loose a piece of brick that had been made to look whole but turned out to be only half an inch thick. "Up to here," Judy pointed. "See the seam? We're taking out everything to the right of that." Nate was still a good 3 feet to its right, so he took another swing at the mortar where the brick had been. The instant the hammer made contact, he was certain something was wrong. He'd hit a pipe after all, or punctured through to Judy's fridge and doused himself in Freon, or maybe even hit an uncharted pocket of asbestos irretrievably coating his lungs, judging by how completely he'd lost his breath along with what felt like all the warmth in his body. The sledgehammer bounced back, and the feeling was gone. Nate stood panting and blinking at the spot he'd struck. Nothing unintended had broken. In fact, his last swing had barely made a dent in what he now realized was not mortar, but hardened concrete. Another few modified bricks had crumbled off its surface, revealing the end of an embedded piece of rebar. "You okay there?" Judy asked, warmly but without serious concern. Nate thought he probably just looked winded. Maybe he was. Or maybe he'd hit the rebar directly and the vibrations had jangled his nerves somehow. Already it was hard to believe he'd felt any less normal a second ago than he did now. "Yeah, I'm not sure we're going to be able to get through this," he said, stepping back to show her. "What?" Judy leaned across him and touched the protruding metal, as if that were the only way she could be persuaded that it existed. "Well, shit," she said, sitting down on the brick-wide chiseled line that now separated kitchen from living room. She looked at the mess and the 3 stubborn feet of wall still partitioning the stove off from the rest of the room, and appeared to wonder if the Legos hadn't been better off where they were after all. "It's not so bad," Nate spoke first, then hurriedly to back up his words. "The kitchen's mostly open. We can get a ladder, finish taking out this section up to the ceiling, and then push the tree right up against the rest of the wall. It won't block your view much more than it already would have, and you'll have until after the holidays to decide how to refinish it." Wrapping that jutting edge of concrete out of sight in the thick branches of the tree outside appealed to Nate more urgently than he would have admitted. Judy nodded and started gathering some of the fragments off the floor.
I could have sworn I remembered.
She got up to stand experimentally in front of the stove.
I can see you from here, said Nate, testing a chair that had the dual benefit of being one of the farthest from the inner wall.
She smiled at him, looked back at the kitchen with general disappointment, and sighed.
Pizza, then?
Nate stayed to finish cleaning up, accepted the offered use of Judy's shower, and then the more direct offer that he not force himself back into his sweaty, clay-dust-covered clothes that night. The bedroom that accounted for the rest of the cottage had a small fireplace, and he fell asleep pleasantly sandwiched between Judy and the crackling flames. He wondered if she slept this way every winter night, or if the cottage's wall had embarrassed her, and she was trying to make up for it with the place's other perks. A silly little hope that she was showing off for him was the last thought he remembered having before a rock crashed through the window, waking him with a start. Nate jolted upright, pulling the covers tight against the cold that was not pouring in from outside, because the window was not broken, and there was no rock to be seen. The fire had burnt to embers, dimmer now than the patches of moonlight pooling like snowdrifts across the curtained window. Nate sat for several seconds, trying to ground himself out of the nightmare with the ordinary realness of the room. It wasn't the best room for this purpose, but even the strangely angled windows of this triangular space were more ordinary than his sleeping mind's sudden decision to invent a clatter of falling glass out of nothing. Careful not to wake Judy, he slipped out from under the covers and into his borrowed robe. The cottage's bathroom shared the same ceiling slant as the other rooms, but with the lights on, he could look at the mirror on the plain, vertical wall, and it was like being in any other bathroom. Feeling almost ready to attempt sleep again, he leaned against that wall and closed his eyes, just to check that it felt as normal as keeping them open. As soon as he touched the orange tiles, it made no difference whether his eyes were open or closed, that much was true. Either way, he could see with perfect clarity the patches of what he'd taken for moonlight, which he now realized existed with no relation to the rotation of celestial bodies, or to the glare of the overhead light fixture. He tried to jerk away, but something was holding his hand. Something cold and hard and smooth enough to pass for bathroom tiles, but much too clingy to complete the illusion. When he looked, he saw nothing beneath his hand but flat orange tile, but the force keeping him there was stronger than a vacuum and more evenly crushing than a vise. There were no cracks in the wall, and yet it continued to litter the cottage with those false moonbeams, tossing them here and there like breadcrumbs without regard for straight lines or reflective surfaces. The more he struggled, the harder it squeezed his arm against the tile, until he wondered if his bones would break or be sucked right through the wall first. The tile's invisible grasp reached his shoulder, and he craned his neck away to keep it from taking hold of his face as well, bracing his other arm around the faucet of the sink. The contact crept its way up toward his collarbone, and just as the cold aura of the tile overlapped the fine hairs on the back of his ear, the wall spoke.
"You burn so bright."
He screamed and tumbled backward into the still damp shower stall as the pressure on his arm instantly ceased.
Nate?
The wall did not reach or call for him where he'd fallen, but Judy's footsteps from the bedroom ticked away an inadequate number of seconds for Nate to formulate an answer to her next question.
What happened?
She asked this from directly outside the door. Nate pulled himself to his feet by the lip of the sink and opened it.
I slipped, he explained.
He felt the sweat dripping down his neck only when Judy followed a drop of it with her eyes. Whatever this looked like to her, it couldn't be good. Like a junkie trying to last too long between fixes, probably, or like a nervous, incompetent thief.
I was having a nightmare, he said, and I guess I was still kinda in it.
Judy held out her arms sympathetically, and Nate leaned into them.
I have another robe if you need it, she said, feeling the damp spots along his back.
Nate imagined putting on another robe and lying back down in the same bed, a few feet in a thin wooden wall away from this bathroom. It felt uncomfortably as if Judy could feel him imagining it, dreading it.
Actually, he said, the word feeling like the first step into a loose ditch of sand that was about to become a rock slide, I think I might need to sleep.
He was skidding downhill.
In my own bed.
Oh, said Judy, letting go and backing into the bedroom. I'll get your clothes. I'll text you first thing, he said. No, wait. He hurried after her as she snatched his jeans and shirt from the rack in front of the fire. They're still wet, she said, holding them out to him. If I'd known, I wouldn't have rinsed them out. Please don't think what you're thinking about me right now. I'm just feeling stupid for a sec. I'll get over it. You're not stupid. Not usually, said Judy. Except for every time I bring home someone I actually like. I just really thought I'd taken long enough to be sure about you. You did. You can be. I swear, I'm not going to ghost you, he said. Her expression was blank. You couldn't wait one lousy night before. Judy. He tried to grab her hands and came away with two handfuls of soggy denim. I really, really don't want this to be over. I'm just... Did you say every time you bring someone here? Specifically? What does it matter where? She asked. If this was going to end on either a truth or a lie, Nate decided he'd take a truth. Have you ever noticed anything? He started. Anything like... Like what? Judy asked, impatient. Nate spat it out. Is there any chance your house is haunted? Judy stared at him for a moment. No, I've never noticed anything like that, she said. Nate shook out the jeans in his hands, reluctantly preparing to step into them. But if it is, I wouldn't be surprised to be the last to know. Nate paused, still holding the unfurled jeans. Can I make you a hot chocolate? Judy asked. Nate nodded. Yes, please. Sitting at the formerly unusable kitchen table, with his knees and elbows hanging over the line where the brick wall had been, Nate did his best to describe what had happened in Judy's bathroom, and earlier when he'd struck the concrete. Was there a pale figure? She asked, pouring the pot of warmed milk over two mugs of Swiss Miss. Was it see-through, or floating in the air? Nate shook his head. I couldn't see her. Her? Judy dropped a pair of candy canes into the mugs and took the seat across from him. I think so, he said, stirring his chocolate left-handed with the candy cane, warming his right hand against the mug. It felt like a her, but she was inside the house. Not like we're inside it, not in its rooms, but... He started to reach for the nearest wall, then decided against touching it and took a sip of chocolate instead. The peppermint added a wonderfully clean feeling to the warmth that spread through him. Why would you be the last to know? He asked. Judy stirred her own cup. Because I can't even see most people while they're alive, she said. Why would I have the gift to see them when they're dead? Nate took another sip, mulling this over. That's ridiculous, he decided aloud. Glass houses, baby, Judy observed. Nate shuddered a little at the recollection of stones crashing through glass, but took the point. I mean, I've met people who don't see people, he said. People who plow right over everyone else. You're the opposite of that. You're a nurse. An activist nurse. People who can't hear have to find other ways to communicate, said Judy. People who can't feel pain have to be twice as careful not to get hurt. I know people exist. I know they have feelings and rights and lives and all, so I'm careful to treat them that way, even though when I look at most of them, it's like looking at a rock. There's no life, there's just nothing. You're not telling me that when you kiss me, when you joke with me, when you make hot chocolate because I'm cold too far under the skin for a blanket to do the trick, you're imitating what you'd do if you felt something for me? No. Judy stopped him before he had to entertain this miserable idea for more than a few seconds. That's why I was so excited to get to know you, to finally bring you here. I can see you. I can see you clearer than I've seen anybody in a long time. She reached across the table and he reached back. His hands were warmer now than hers.
He blushed down at his mug and thought about the words the tiles had whispered in his ear.
You burn so bright.
It might have been the hot chocolate, or the difference a few moments of normality could make, but whatever lived in this cottage no longer felt quite so threatening. The fear of making contact with it again wasn't nearly as bad if it didn't come with the fear of having to lie about it and wonder in silence what was going to happen next. Maybe if I burn bright enough that someone as cool as you can see me, it's worth being seen by a few ghosts, too, said Nate. Then, so as not to let it seem that this apparent gift for the netherworld had gone to his head, he added, you must be blinding to them. Judy rolled her eyes. If that was a setup to tell me I light up the room? Well done. You do, though, said Nate. Maybe you're so bright that almost everyone else is in shadow to you. Judy entertained this suggestion the way she savored another sip of chocolate before swallowing it away. Or I'm so dim that I can't illuminate anything but me? She shook her head. Nah, I'm like one of those glow sticks. Pretty colors, but I can't see past my nose unless there's a floodlight like you in the room. Well, I can see you clear as day, said Nate, unsure what proof he could offer of something so true yet so intangible. He raised his mug. You don't have anything to harden this up with by any chance, do you? I wouldn't want you taking any chances on the road, said Judy with just a hint of coolness. Neither would I. He held her gaze, seeing her as hard as he could, until she broke off, smiling. Upper cabinet, she said. In the weeks before Christmas, Nate spent more time at Judy's cottage than his own apartment, helping her remove the last of the bricks that would come loose and decorating the enormous tree she'd selected. After his experience with the bathroom tiles, things had remained ordinary for 3 full days, long enough for him to begin wondering if it really had been an overblown nightmare after all. Until he was topping off his coffee, alone at the kitchen table after Judy had gone to work, and a cylinder of oatmeal tumbled down from the shelf over the stove across from him, spilling itself across the floor. As soon as he stood to reach for the broom, the oats leapt into the air like a school of tiny fish, forming the shape of a woman, with a face that could have been carved into the gates of some holy inner sanctum as a warning to trespassers. Nate reached for his phone, but before he could begin to focus its camera, the oats fell flat against the tiles. He waited, but they didn't move again. Nice to officially meet you, too, he said to the empty room. That was what it felt like. Then, and in each instance that followed, like a hello, carefully calmer and more polite than their initial handshake. Often it was only the sensation of a hand on his shoulder, or an oddly shaped wisp of moonlight where moonlight should not have been, always at the perfect time to reassure him that the previous hello had truly happened. Most days when Judy worked earlier or later than Nate and left him alone in the cottage, he sat in her living room with his laptop, researching ghost sightings, psychic sensitivity, and the history of the cottage itself. There wasn't much to be found on that subject. It had once been part of Chipwood, a neighborhood of small, fashionable homes like it, but a series of buyouts and developments had left it the last residential island in a sea of office blocks. If there was a particular reason why Judy's cottage had been left when its fellows had been leveled, it either hadn't been deemed newsworthy, or it had happened before news was recorded on anything more lastingly accessible than wood pulp, and no one had since found it a priority to transcribe. Nate then branched out into researching the area as a whole. Chipwood, when it had existed, had the reputation of a hippie haven, with all the associated tensions between itself and the more family-oriented neighborhood that had once bordered it. Most of the articles that mentioned Chipwood only did so in lists of similar enclaves while analyzing broader trends. Fully expecting another dead end, Nate scrolled down to the related articles bar at the bottom of yet another page, and froze with his mouse next to an image of a woman's smiling face. News articles didn't start with images like that, images of contented smiles free of heart-crushing troubles, except in one context. As if he needed any more confirmation that this was the same face he'd seen rendered in grain and stripped of its smile in the cottage's kitchen, the lights flickered overhead as he clicked on it, and a draft blew in through the firmly closed window behind his neck. People you've never heard of who died for good causes,
the article was titled, and it was full of those smiles. "Gale?" he asked, scanning the page for the name to match the right face. "Flicker, flicker," answered the lights. Judy's key turned in the lock, and the brightness of the room stabilized. "I see you two are still getting along," she said, tossing her purse on the couch next to Nate and sinking into the cushions beside it. "I found her," said Nate, pointing excitedly to Gale's section of the article. "And I think you'd get along great, too. She was a med student, stabbed by counter-protesters at a women's lib rally in 73. When Judy didn't answer, Nate turned to find her hurriedly rubbing her eyes. "What is it?" He snapped the laptop closed and pushed it away to scoot closer to her. It was a sad article, to be sure, but the fact that the spirit tied to this cottage had died a less than heartwarming death was hardly a shocking revelation. "Nothing. I don't know." She rubbed harder. "I'm just tired, and I wanted so much to spend Christmas Eve with you." "No luck?" he asked, wrapping an arm around her. "Swing shift," she answered. He rubbed her arm, letting her carry the disappointment for both of them while he carried the bargaining. "Why can't more lives need saving during bank hours, huh?" Judy chuckled sadly. "What about Christmas Day?" he asked. "Same," she answered. "So we'll have Christmas morning then," he said. "That's the best part. We'll get to wake up together, get the lights going on that big, beautiful tree, open presents, and then later I'll bring you to meet my mom." She swallowed and nodded.
That does sound nice.
And so Nate settled in to spend Christmas Eve with Gale, waiting for Judy to stumble in with time for one last bedtime glass of eggnog. Gale was particularly restless that evening. Every time Nate came close to losing himself to the book in his lap, the moonlight would dance across the pages in distracting, irregular patterns, or the brick wall would pound for his attention from the inside.
"I know," he told her. "I was so sorry to read what happened to you."
At 10:30, the pounding became a keening whimper.
Hey, it's okay."
He got up to pat the remains of the interior wall as one might pat a friend's shoulder.
"No one can touch you again."
The brick wrapped frantically around his hand, pulling his arm close against its dry porousness.
"Don't do that."
He pulled back, and Gale released him, but one of the reinforcing bars crumbled its way farther out of the concrete to trail after him. When he paused, it wrapped halfway around his wrist as gently as a steel bar could. The Christmas tree rocked, its lights flickering urgently. Nate looked to his present for Judy, tucked beneath its low-hanging branches. When he'd bought and wrapped it, he'd eagerly imagined how she'd look when she opened it to find not jewelry or perfume or lingerie, but something so much more personal. Now, with Gale's pleading, warning steel fingers around his wrist, he suddenly wondered if a concrete saw was too ugly and utilitarian a thing to give as a gift, especially on a first Christmas. Maybe a handmade gift would have been a clearer gesture. The steel squeezed him encouragingly. He could still make her something. He could give her the open kitchen of her dreams, this evening, right now, and find out at the same time what Gale kept pulling him so insistently toward. It would be a Christmas present for them both. Gale withdrew the rebar, and the Christmas lights twinkled merrily. Nate shifted the tree a few yards away from the raw edge it had been tasked with covering and grabbed the package from beneath it. He tore through the box and wrapping paper together and plugged in the saw. What a difference the right tool for the job could make. It cut easily through the stubborn section of wall that had stood up to his best efforts with the sledgehammer. Soon the stove was fully visible from all corners of the living room, and so was a large kitchen cabinet that had been lost to the width of the concrete wall. Gale popped its latch open, and Nate stepped inside. Beyond the cabinet door was a concrete box, barely larger than the refrigerator. Curled up against the wall that adjoined Judy's bedroom was a skeleton. Above its skull, there was a deadbolt. Nate turned it and then turned it back. It had already been unlocked, but this second door wouldn't budge. He took the saw to its outline and had to cut through several spots of concrete that appeared to have oozed into the crack while they were soft in a haphazard and unintentional pattern. Finally, the door creaked open into the back of Judy's closet. Nate looked back at Gail's skeleton, unsure how it had gotten here. The article had said she died at that rally. It hadn't mentioned what had happened to her body, but this wasn't a place for hiding a body anyway. The thick layer of dust on the floor had fallen over a collection of cushions, canteens, and photographs. Comforts. Someone must have been very afraid to have torn the cottage apart to build such a room. Too afraid even to wait for the concrete to cure. Afraid of the kinds of people who hurled rocks at their beds through slanted panes of glass, perhaps. Nate picked up one of the framed photos. There were two faces under all that dust. Both familiar, but their juxtaposition made no sense. There was too much light in the room as well, light that didn't belong. The stray breadcrumbs of moonlight brightened and gathered themselves momentarily back into the hastily installed panic room, taking shape around the skeleton, the same shape they had held solid for so many painstaking hours of so many days. This wasn't Gail's skeleton, Nate realized, looking closer at the two women in the picture, a lump rising in his throat. It was the skeleton of someone who had marched with her, someone who had loved her.
"Thank you," said Judy, looking up from the spot where she had left her bones. "For burning brighter than a rock, bright enough to see by."
Nate shook his head. It had never been people of dull rock that Judy could feel, he was sure, but people on the other side of concrete.
"I just brought the saw," he said, as the light began to scatter.
Cozy and Snug was written by Fiona J.R. Titchnell and performed by Matt Carter. Narration was provided by Fiona J.R. Titchnell. This episode was edited by Matt Carter and Fiona J.R. Titchnell. The Shadow Storyteller's theme, written and performed by Dennis Titchnell. The Shadow Storyteller's artwork by Kristen McQuiggan of Drop Dead Designs. Special thanks to Lisa Onzo and Greg Bowles for the use of their guest room in this recording. For more information on the Shadow Storytellers podcast and our other fiction works, please visit our website at theshadowstorytellers.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please like and subscribe for more information on upcoming episodes. We hope you had fun, and we'll see you again soon.